Have you ever really thought about what it takes to build, say, the roads you drive on, or the pipes bringing water to your tap?
It's a massive undertaking, isn't it? More than just the physical work.
Exactly. It's not just concrete and steel. There's this whole layer of planning, oversight, making sure everything's done right. But how do they actually guarantee that quality, down to the details?
Well, that's where the paperwork comes in, but not just any paperwork.
Right. And today, we're actually doing a deep dive into one specific type of document that shows us exactly how. It's called a Master Professional Services Agreement Task Authorization.
Sounds a bit dry, maybe.
It does, but trust me, it's not just legal jargon. Think of it like a blueprint for quality, especially for essential public infrastructure.
Okay.
So our mission today is to unpack this specific agreement. It's between the City of Shawnee, the Shawnee Municipal Authority, and an engineering firm, Fries and Nichols, Inc.
F&I, got it.
We're going to pull out the interesting bits, the details that show how this engineering oversight really works, giving you, our listener, a peek behind the curtain of these public services.
All right, let's get into it.
Okay, so let's open this agreement up. The first thing that really jumps out is how specific the projects are.
Yes, the scope.
Yeah, we're looking at three main initiatives here, each with its own project code. You've got Shawnee Waterline Independence, then Thompson Heights, and sewer pipe bursting.
Very specific titles, not just water system upgrades.
Exactly. These are clearly defined vital improvements. What does that specificity immediately signal to you, looking at this type of agreement?
Well, it immediately says this isn't some vague, open-ended deal. Right from the start, everyone knows exactly what work is covered.
So accountability is built in from line one.
Precisely. It defines the scope, sets expectations, and lays the foundation for tracking progress and quality control. It means public money is tied to very concrete results.
Makes sense. And right at the heart of making sure these specific projects are done correctly, the agreement highlights one role in particular.
The inspector, I assume.
Yes, a full-time, knowledgeable resident inspector provided by FNI. And when they say full-time, they mean it. We're talking about 8 hours a day,
Wow.
5 days a week for 26 weeks, plus some extra partial weeks too. That's a serious amount of time on site.
That's a significant commitment. It tells you this isn't remote oversight. They want eyes directly on the project, day in, day out.
So what kind of responsibilities does this one inspector actually have? That seems like a lot rests on their shoulders.
It's incredibly broad. This person isn't just, watching. They're actively ensuring sound engineering principles and building practices are followed for the city.
Okay, so the technical oversight.
Right. They have to report on progress. They need to confirm that the correct materials are being used, checking against the approved plans and specifications.
Which is crucial, I imagine. Using the wrong pipe grade or something.
Could be disastrous down the line. And for pipelines specifically, there's a key duty mentioned. Assuring joint fusing is completed properly.
Joint fusing, what does that involve?
It's essentially how sections of pipe, especially certain plastic pipes, are welded together using heat. Getting that seal perfect is absolutely critical to prevent leaks and ensure the whole thing holds up under pressure.
Okay, so a very hands-on technical check.
Very much so. And beyond the physical work, they also approve pay applications.
Which means they're signing off on the contractor getting paid based on progress.
Exactly. It's a big financial control point.
Yeah.
And importantly, they also help sort out issues with landowners, which, let's be honest, almost always pop up during construction projects like these.
Right. Access issues, maybe noise complaints, things like that.
All sorts of things. Having the inspector as a point person helps keep the project moving smoothly.
Okay, so it's a mix of technical expert, quality control, financial check, and even a bit of diplomacy.
You could say that, yeah. It's a demanding role.
And the agreement doesn't stop there. It specifies really rigorous standards this inspector has to follow.
The benchmarks.
Yeah, they have to use something called the ORF 151 Daily Construction Report.
Huh.
That's a specific format from the Oklahoma Water Resources Board.
Standardized reporting, good.
And they need to be present for all necessary testing, making sure procedures and results meet current standards from, well, a whole alphabet soup of organizations.
Like who?
Like the American Water Works Association, AWWA, the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials, AHHDO.
Okay, water and roads.
American Society of Testing and Materials, ASTM. And the Oklahoma Department of Transportation, ODOT. Or it's a similar criteria.
Right, that's a wide range. AWWA for water specifics, AHH2 for anything road-related perhaps, ASTM for the actual materials being used, ODT for state requirements.
So why? Why is it so critical for one inspector on, say, a waterline project to follow standards from road organizations or materials testing groups?
That's a really important question. Why this big list? Well, these organizations, they set the industry benchmarks, the gold standards.
Okay.
Following their rules isn't just bureaucratic box ticking. It's fundamental for safety, making sure the infrastructure is sound, that it won't fail.
Prevents future problems.
Exactly. It also dictates the longevity of the project. Are we building something that will last 5 years or 50 years? Adhering to these standards aims for the latter, ensuring public money is a real investment.
Right. And you mentioned public trust earlier.
Absolutely. It builds confidence. The public needs to trust that these essential services are built properly using the best available knowledge and practices, not just, you know, whatever seems easiest locally.
So it's about safety, durability, and that public trust. Even with all our digital tools, it seems that having a dedicated person on site following these standards is still key.
It really is. That human element, that direct oversight, remains the linchpin for quality assurance in the physical world.
Okay, so we have this inspector on site daily following strict standards. What's the time frame for all this? And what are the actual, like, tangible things produced?
Well, the timeline mentioned in the document runs from October 2023 through May 2024. So a pretty defined period.
About 7 or 8 months.
Right. And you asked about tangible outputs. It's not just about being there. It's about documenting. The specific deliverables listed are those daily construction reports using that ORF 151 format.
Okay, the daily logs.
And approved pay applications. So you have a consistent record of progress, issues, compliance, and verified spending. It's auditable.
Got it. Clear documentation trail. Now let's talk money. This level of oversight, it obviously has a cost.
Naturally.
The agreement sets a not-to-exceed amount. It's $162,842 for these services, which gives the city a budget cap, right?
Yes, that's crucial for financial planning, a fixed ceiling.
But what I found really fascinating was the breakdown of how they get to that number. It's incredibly detailed. Well, first, they list the hourly rates for different F&I people who might be involved. Like, a construction representative is $150 an hour. A construction manager, $233. It goes up to $285 for a senior group manager.
Tiered rates based on expertise and responsibility, standard practice.
Right, but then you get into the other direct costs, and this is where it gets really granular.
Okay, like what? Expenses.
Expenses, but super specific.
Yeah.
Costs for printing different rates, for black and white, color, large format, glossy paper, binding.
Wow, they really itemize.
They do. There's an $8.50 per hour technology charge. And then rates for specific equipment.
This level of detail is actually a good sign. It promotes transparency.
How so? What does itemizing, say, printing costs achieve?
It prevents waste, or at least makes it visible. When every little cost is itemized, it discourages unnecessary expenses. It also justifies the overall cost. You can see what you're paying for, not just a lump sum for overheads. That technology charge, for example, likely covers software licenses, data storage, maybe specialized devices used for reporting, things essential for modern engineering work.
Okay, that makes sense. And some of the equipment rates listed are really specific, too. Things like a valve crew vehicle is $75 an hour, pressure data loggers, water quality meters.
Standard tools for water system work.
Yeah.
Monitoring pressure, checking water quality.
But then I saw one that made me pause. A backpack electrofisher for $1,000. Each.
A backpack electrofisher. Okay, that one's less common for simple pipe laying.
Right. My first thought was, are they fishing on the job? What is an electrofisher doing in a waterline and sewer pipe agreement?
Probably not fishing breaks. An electrofisher is actually a tool used for aquatic surveys. It sends a mild electrical current into the water to temporarily stun fish.
Stun fish? Why?
So biologists can collect them, identify species, measure them, check their health, and then release them unharmed. It's often used for environmental assessments.
Ah, so its presence here might mean.
It strongly suggests these projects might involve work near streams, rivers, or ponds where they need to assess the potential environmental impact. Maybe they need to survey the existing aquatic life before construction starts, or possibly relocate sensitive species.
Okay, that makes way more sense. It shows there's potentially an environmental compliance aspect baked into the budget.
Exactly. It highlights that these infrastructure projects often have hidden complexities beyond just the engineering. You have to consider the surrounding environment, too.
That's a great example. Now, beyond these direct costs for personnel and equipment, the agreement mentions expense multipliers.
Ah, yes, the markups for handling certain costs.
Right. There's a 1.15 times multiplier for things like outside printing, travel, lab analysis. Basically costs FNI pays to third parties.
Standard practice to cover the administrative effort of procuring and managing those external services.
Okay. But then there's a higher multiplier, 2.0 times for two specific things.
Yep.
Resident representative services performed by non-FNI employees and CAD services performed in-house by non-FNI employees, where FNI provides workspace and equipment.
Right. Double the cost.
Why the 2.0 multiplier for using non-FNI staff, even if they're working in FNI's office?
Well, if you connect that to the bigger picture, that 2.0 multiplier is often used to approximate the fully burdened cost if FNI had used their own employee instead.
Fully burdened cost, meaning salary plus.
Salary plus benefits, overhead like office space, utilities, insurance, administrative support, IT infrastructure, all the indirect costs associated with having an employee.
So even if they hire a specialist contractor, FNI still has costs related to managing them, maybe providing them a desk, computer software access.
Yeah, precisely. That 2.0 multiplier accounts for that overhead burden FNI takes on by managing and potentially housing that external expert or CAD technician. It ensures FNI is compensated fairly for integrating that person into their workflow and maintaining quality control, reflecting the true cost of providing that service, regardless of who performs the specific task.
Got it. So it reflects the total cost impact on FNI, not just the contractor's invoice.
Exactly. It allows for flexible staffing while accounting for the associated costs realistically.
Okay. Makes sense. And one last piece here related to managing everything communication.
Always critical.
The agreement is very clear about who's responsible for what. It lists designated representatives for both client, City of Shawnee, and FNI.
Names and roles.
Names, roles, phone numbers, emails. For the city, it's Seth Barkheimer as the main rep. Lindsay McNabb, Fox for accounting. For FNI, Paul D. Green is the main rep, Stephanie Kirchstein for accounting.
Clear points of contact.
Why is having this level of specific contact info laid out right in the agreement so important for making a project like this succeed?
Oh, it's absolutely vital. Think about it when issues come up, and they always do.
Right.
You can't afford delays trying to figure out who to call or who has the authority to make a decision. Is it a technical question? Call Paul Green. Is it a billing question? Call Stephanie or Lindsay. Is there a site issue needing the city's input? Call Seth.
So it prevents confusion and bottlenecks.
Exactly. It establishes clear, direct lines for communication and, importantly, for accountability. If there's a problem with a material delivery or a landowner issue escalates or there's a query on an invoice, everyone knows immediately who to contact to get it resolved efficiently.
It greases the wheels, basically.
It does. It's a simple thing, listing names and numbers, but it's foundational for smooth project execution, transparency, and making sure information flows correctly. It shows that even managing communication is seen as critical to the project's quality.
Okay, so we've dug through the details of this task authorization.
Yeah.
The specific projects, the inspector's deep role, the rigorous standards, the itemized costs, the clear communication lines. Why should someone listening right now, who maybe isn't an engineer or a city planner, why should you care about a document like this?
Well, because this deep dive really shows the incredible amount of thought, detail, and frankly, oversight that goes into the infrastructure you rely on every single day.
It's not just happening by chance.
Not at all. It's about ensuring public safety, making sure that water pipe doesn't burst, that sewer line functions properly. It's about making efficient use of your taxpayer money, ensuring it's spent wisely on materials and methods that meet high standards.
And about making things last.
And ensuring the longevity of these absolutely essential services. This document reveals the layers of accountability built into these large public projects. It's the hidden framework that ensures the systems supporting your daily life are robust, reliable, and built with quality in mind, hopefully for generations to come.
It really is the assurance behind the scenes for services we often just take for granted.
That's a good way to put it.
Wow. This single document really did give us a comprehensive look at the meticulous planning, the diverse expertise needed, and that stringent oversight required for these critical city projects.
It's a fascinating snapshot, isn't it?
It really is. So maybe the next time you turn on your faucet or drive over a newly paved road, just take a second to consider the unseen layers. These agreements, the inspections, the detailed planning, just like the one we explored today, all working together to make sure those vital services function, well, hopefully flawlessly.